Usually we start on time.
Troublemaker.
And they should be coming.
Sorry we're a little late today.
Still in we're
off. We call the House Committee on Health Care to order for this 17th of March. I'm going to announce we are going to hold over the work session on House Bill 2395. In fact, reschedule it rather than hold it over.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, we'll reschedule House Bill 2395. It's not quite ready for prime time. We have a couple of straightforward work sessions. Maybe we ought to get those out of the way. We have a quorum. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2340. Madam Administrator, what do we have?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2340 authorizes the Department of Consumer and Business Services to permit and ensure the discontinued offering a health benefit plan in a service area to reduce the mandatory five-year ban, reorganizes and updates to the health care service contractors and the multiple employer welfare arrangement references. Mr. Chair, this is basically a updating their statute on the HCSCs and the MIWAs. The department did provide a one-pager breakdown of the technical issues raised in the Dash 1 amendment. We do have a no-expenditure fiscal on the Dash 1 and a no-revenue on the Dash 1 if the committee so chooses.
All right. There was some nervousness about the five-year thing, but I think it's okay in the form it's in. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, is the department okay with the Dash 1s?
Yes.
They are?
They are their amendments.
Okay. I misunderstood you.
I probably didn't say it. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion. Mr. Chair, I would like to move that the committee adopt the Dash 1s dated March 1st, 2017, to House Bill 2340.
Those notes moves the Dash 1 amendments dated 3-1-17 be added to House Bill 2340. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection? So moved. We have another motion, sir.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move House Bill 2340 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Nose moves House Bill 2340 as amended with the Dash 1 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Can you call the roll, please?
Representative
T. Meyer.
Aye. Representative
Bueller. Yes.
Representative Alonzo Leon.
Aye.
Representative Kennemer.
Excuse.
Representative Malmstrom.
Aye.
Representative Hack.
Aye.
Vice Chair Nose.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hayden.
Aye.
Chair Greenland.
Aye. Motion carries. Do we have a volunteer?
How big is the bill?
I'll carry it. Okay. I'll figure it out. Green will carry it. Close the work session on House Bill 2340. Open up a work session on House Bill 2341. Madam Administrator?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, this is a Department of Consumer and Business Services bill. We have a Dash 1 amendment on this bill. We had a public hearing on February 8th on the bill. This is even more technical. It updates the insurance code provisions applicable to the health insurance codes from Oregon with federal requirements. This has an emergency clause effective on passage. Again, the Dash 1 amendments are from the department, and there's again a two-page document that specifies the technical Dash 1 amendments. It addresses mental health parity in the benefit determination definition, has some technical changes in hearing aids. We change a small employer definition to align with the federal regulation and definition and short-term policies. Mr. Chair, I do want to highlight with the Dash 1 amendments, we do have a fiscal impact statement. It is associated with other funds, and I touch base with the Ways and Means Committee, and they do not feel the need that it needs to further evaluation in the Ways and Means Committee. So there is a fiscal statement on this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. There's not an existing subsequent.
No, there is not, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Can I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that the committee adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated March 7th, 2017 to House Bill 2341.
Representative Nose moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2341. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection? So moved. Another motion, please.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move House Bill 2341 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, we have a motion from Representative Nose to move House Bill 2341 as amended with the Dash 1 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? You call the roll, please.
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Aye.
Representative Bueller.
Yes.
Representative Alonzo Leon.
Aye.
Representative Kenner.
Excuse.
Representative
Nostrom.
Aye.
Representative Hack.
Aye.
Vice Chair Nose.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hayden.
Aye.
Chair
Greenlee. Aye. Motion carries. I may as well carry that one too and hope nobody asks any questions about either. Sandy, you can be there with me to answer all the questions.
Will do, Mr. Chair.
Close the work session. On House Bill 2341.
I was going to volunteer since you took it.
Well, if I'm doing one, I might.
Think about the question that you asked the other day.
I might figure out what they said.
When you were asking about the reproductive health care.
No, those recommended you do the hearing of it. No, I saved you from that.
Thank you.
It's changed in the bill.
Should we open both of them at the same time?
Yeah, I think that's appropriate.
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2979 and House Bill 2980. Madam Administrator, what have we got?
Mr. Chair.
Hayden, are you going to introduce
that? Yes, it's individuals.
Go for it.
Well, while he's doing that, House Bill 2979 eliminates certain categories of medical assistant recipients from the exception from enrollment into a CCO organization. Requires the Oregon Health Authority to enroll the individuals into a CCO no later than 15 days after eligibility has been determined or disenrollment has occurred from another CCO. And this is a Representative Hayden's bill.
And 2980.
And 2980 authorizes the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority to contract with more than one public agency or private corporation to provide mental health and developmental disability services if a county declines to operate a community mental health program or a community developmental disability program.
And I understand Administrator Saxon's going to be talking about 2980, is that right? Thank you. Representative Hayden, go for it.
Thank you, Chair Greenleek and Vice Chair Nose, members of the committee. My name is Cedric Hayden, State Representative from House District 7. We brought before you for discussion House Bill 2979 today. Wednesday, we had the opportunity to hear an informational hearing from the CCOs on the amount of members, currently around 150,000 members. It does fluctuate in the Oregon Health Plan under the managed care system. The 150,000 are not in the managed care system, let me correct that, that are in the open card and assigned to fee-for-service. Fee-for-service is an important role that plays in the Oregon Health Plan system. There are some members that are categorically not able to roll into a managed care system. One of those examples are our Native American folks have the choice whether they want to be in that system or not. I know there's a lot of effort going around with the tribes to work with that, particularly with our new 1115 waiver coming forward. There's some more opportunities in there for them to organize and be more involved with the health care for their members. I'm very supportive of that. But we have a lot of other members. We're approaching 15 or 16% of the Oregon Health Plan currently is in a fee-for-service category. This endeavor, which results in House Bill 2979, is an attempt to make our coordinated care system more sustainable in the future going forward. Recently with federal changes, that looks even more and more important as we go forward, that we all work together, that we have integration in the different aspects of oral health, physical health, and the mental health space so that the CCOs can continue to be successful. Currently, we do require under statute the Oregon Health Authority to enroll members into a CCO that are appropriately eligible and don't have some exemptions. We heard Wednesday that some of those exemptions are federal exemptions and some of those exemptions are state-driven statute, meaning we have chosen to make these exemptions. So this bill does not deal with any of the federally exempt populations that must remain the opportunity to stay within a fee-for-service. It deals only with and includes all of discussion, all of the state's exemptions that we have put upon ourselves, those categories. The Legislative Council, at my request, has removed those categories in this bill. I know as we go forward with this bill, there will be discussions about Is that an appropriate exemption to have? And so I do expect some amendments coming forward on this bill. I don't expect it to pass as is. The meat of the bill, if you will, comes in the first section, Section 1, which basically takes out the health authority's direction to assign these members to a CCO. My concern with the current statute is it puts no sideboards around when they do that. And so people can sit when they get their reassignment, or as we heard, the 80,000 members are close to 10%, 8% of the population every month in the Oregon Health Authority has to go through a reassignment, about a 30-page document that they are expected pretty much on their own to fill out, get turned in, federally barred from the CCOs to help them with that. So we're trying to figure out a way for the Oregon Health Authority to come up with a path to get these members quickly, if not directly, to the CCOs. My preference would be for them to be directly enrolled, but, you know, we work with compromise. And so the compromise that I came up with this bill is that they have 15 days to assign those members. Currently, they can languish in this reapplication process for 30, 60, 90 days or even more, and then we get into the retroactive assignment. This causes a lot of problems with the networks accepting patients in the CCOs, and then they have the reassignment. An example in oral health, one of the things that I've been working on integrating is, although I don't have statistics to prove this to you, we have about 25 dental offices that are open to taking fee-for-service members for oral health in the state of Oregon. That membership, those 25 dentists, are expected theoretically to serve 150,000 members. There's just not enough capacity there. There is not a network in place to serve these members. And so I would hope that we can work on this bill to reduce the members in the fee-for-service realm that are not categorically exempt federally, that we can change our state statutes, that we can include more of those people, and that we can do it within 2 weeks rather than 30, 60, 90 days. That's the heart of the bill. Very open to suggestions, modifications. We expect that. But I think there's a cultural change that is our responsibility to stabilize the CCO model. We've bought into that model. I believe in that model. I think it has been very successful. We would like to continue that model. But as federal changes are coming, there are proposals on the horizon, we need to make sure that all of our streams of fundings go towards the best access, the best care, the best model that we have. And though fee-for-service is important, I don't believe it's the best model for all of the members or up to 150,000 members currently. So my focus to close here is simply this. I want to be able to facilitate a discussion around this bill. Modifications, amendments are encouraged with the sole goal of driving care to our clients rather than keeping it in individual buckets that have, for whatever reason, not gotten the care to these clients as quickly as we would like to. Thank you.
You want to open 2980 as well?
Sure.
Kenny Garner had a question.
Oh, Kenny Garner.
Thank you. Thank you, Rep. Hayden. I appreciate the direction of this. I'm trying to understand who are some of the groups that are not included in the feds and not exempted in this. I'm thinking, for instance, of the women who categorically are eligible when they're pregnant up to 185%. Would that be included? And could you list maybe some of the groups that are state decisions that you are hoping will be folded into the CCO network as soon as possible?
There are several categories of women during their pregnancy. One of those categories is the CALM women.
And that's exempted, I see.
Those are exempted. Right. Those are federally exempted, so we can't enroll them directly. But there is another category of pregnant women that is not exempted, mm-hmm. that for reasons that I would like to correct, get left in a CCO because perhaps they're there for a short term. They may not be eligible. They got their 30-page thing filled out late. But there's several thousand women, and I've had different reports that can fluctuate up to about 6,000 women and down to about 2,000 women, depending on the caseload, that stay on fee-for-service. We looked very closely at that population with oral health. Again, that comes back to how many dentists are available to them. And we looked very closely at a comparison of managed care, CALM women, and women on fee-for-service that were pregnant. The CALM women receive, on average, about 60% of the members get in for dental care, and they actually receive the best dental care through the federally qualified health centers, or at least the most. So they had the best access. The managed care organizations with these women that aren't categorically ineligible to be assigned, or the ones that we could put in managed care, the ones that are there, and there are some, they received about a 30 to 40% access rate, which is very standard within managed care, meaning that 30 or 40% within a period of time had access to dental services. The women that were pregnant that are within the fee-for-service, if you look back at 2014, 2015, respectively, they received 9% access to care, and in 2015 they received 18%. So they're receiving about five times more access to care in the federally qualified health centers for the same women, the same poverty level, the same category, which is pregnant women below 185% of the federal poverty level, above 100% of the federally qualified or the federal poverty level. And in the fee-for-service, it was more of an average of what we see in our other CCO population. So if you're hitting 30 or 40%, that's really what we see with other physical health. So we're wanting to That is a good example of a category that we would like help into a CCO. I originally tried to work on getting the health authority to work on having a network, have been unsuccessful with that for many reasons. One of it is the retroactive payment that providers, if they provide the service, they turn in a bill to the fee-for-service, and all of a sudden that member is retroactively assigned once a billing gets started to a CCO, and the provider either doesn't get paid or has a very difficult time proving payment. So that's a more integral conversation. We're really looking overall what we can do to get these members more access to care.
So can we follow up on that?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So thank you for digging into this. I know you've worked really hard on this. So my assumption then is that because the fee for service care that's been given is so much lower than the people who are in a CCO, that's part of what's driving you to want to, even in that category for a short period of time, get them into a CCO. And because, in part, once they're in a CCO, then they'll be assigned to a DCO or a network of providers. Is that Is my assumption correct?
Yes, and once we have the ability to get these women into a CCO, it's extremely important. The 15 days is extremely important for the pregnant women or immediate enrollment, because we have a very short period of time to provide that for them. If they wait 3 months to get signed up, they're past their first trimester. I mean, to be identified as being pregnant may take a couple of months to begin with, so you're really only looking at, under the fee-for-service model, several months of pregnancy left, which is the third trimester, which most pregnant women are not really excited about laying back in a dental chair during that trimester. And honestly, most dentists aren't excited about, you know, trying to have them in that situation where they were much more comfortable treating them in the first and second trimester. And so we're trying to get them actual service, not just a retroactively assignment or an assignment of trying to get that done within the first trimester, but actually have them a dental office they can go to.
Representative Malister.
Yes, thank you, Chair. What kind of barriers have you identified to speeding up this process?
Really, it's our own barriers that we have put in place in statute as we develop the CCO process. And again, I'm very supportive of the CCO process 3 to 5 years ago as some of us sat on committees and conferences and think tanks to develop the CCOs. We tried to think ahead what would be the appropriate exemptions in there. I think they were appropriate at the time. Now we have a lot more history. Now we have a lot more robust CCO programs out there. We've got 16 programs across the state that we didn't have when these statutes were set up. And I did travel in October to all those CCOs. I did discuss these types of issues with them. How could we integrate? They're ready to take this on. And they have the networks to do it.
Thank you.
Would you like to open?
I would be happy to open the next bill. So the next bill is House Bill 2980. This is a little more of a controversial bill, but I think it's a very, very important bill. House Bill 2980 would not require that there is any change in the county mental health process currently going on, but it would give more flexibility in certain situations where we historically have had a problem. Most of those examples are in rural Oregon, where we have a county mental health that either has decided not to continue to provide that and they bring in a different entity to provide mental health services.
You're talking about the county mental health authority.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I do have OHA here to explain this a little bit further. But the concept behind this bill is we have currently some struggles going on with the county mental health or the relationship between the CCOs and the county mental health or the individual entity that has taken over for the county mental health. The transition between if one of these entities, either the county declines to continue to provide that service or the entity that was providing that service goes into bankruptcy, isn't providing adequate network, it's my belief that OHA has a struggle going through the system that can often end up in court, where they can only certify one entity under our statute, which was put in place before the CCOs, to provide that service at a time. And so they have to wait for that system to take its course, to go through the court systems. And I believe they do have some emergency exemptions. Serve Oregon was able to come into Douglas County when we had a tragedy down there in October 1st, 2015, and provide some services. So there are some safety nets there that are appropriately there. But with this concept, I would like to have OHA to have a little more authority to step in situations where we have concerns. And again, my concern drives directly down to the client. What is the best access, the best ability for us here in the legislature to get access to that client in times when we have a failing, poorly funded mental health system that we have, when those entities are not able to survive with the funds that we allot? I would like to see them get a lot more funds. Again, on this bill is also driven by the concerns of the federal government separating out dedicated funding for mental health in the future. This is a proposal on the federal system. It's not something that has passed yet. I'm concerned with that. And I think more coordination between the CCO and the mental health is very important. And this statute is actually kind of a root cause that can be a barrier, in my opinion. And I know there's a lot of opinions on this, but it can be a root cause that inhibits OHA from stepping in as quickly as I think they should be able to make sure that those clients don't get left without coverage for it. I would like to add that oral health has been in this realm that it looks possibly that mental health may be in within 3 years, that oral health for adults is not federally required. So oral health has, since 1994, has been, quote unquote, on the chopping block or has always been a point of discussion of funding. And so the oral health partners have realized that we need to be collaborative and we need to be part of this. And there was a slow roll in on that process as physical health got set up. Oral health came in 2 years later. It's 3 years past that. And I think it's now time to have the discussion of how we can utilize all of our assets out there for mental health, but incorporate them into CCO so if their dedicated funding gets cut, that there will be a network in place for them. So this is proactive thinking into the future.
Great. Ms. Sessions, you want to comment? You're here to talk about 2980, I assume.
Yes.
Will you be commenting on the Jackson County situation?
Yes.
Good. Please go ahead.
Ready? Okay. Good morning, Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Nose. I'm Lynn Saxton. I'm the director of the Oregon Health Authority, and I'm pleased to be with you this morning to talk about proposed House Bill 2980. We have been working and are statutorily required to work with communities across the state through two principal authorities, our authority for the community mental health program and our authority, contractual authority with the coordinated care organizations. Our foremost priority is to ensure all Oregonians have adequate and timely access to quality physical, behavioral, and oral health services through these statutory obligations. Our executive leadership over the past several years has been working closely with the Douglas County Board of Commissioners, the Community Health Alliance, doing business as ADAPT, Architrave Health, Limited Liability Corporation, and the Umpqua Health Alliance. We're assisting with these parties in ensuring coverage needs of community members in Douglas County are met. And those efforts include the following initiatives. We have worked with the Community Health Alliance to create and report a monthly dashboard to track the monthly number of crisis and non-crisis services provided and the mean number of days between first and follow-up appointments. For January, for example, CHA saw 36 unduplicated clients for crisis CMHP services and 178 unduplicated clients for non-crisis CMHP services. We have requested that the Community Health Alliance report any factors that have created barriers to accessing services for Douglas County residents. Again, they submit in January, their last submittal in January includes concerns with the ability to attract qualified professional staff, current lack of access that was created, has created some referral patterns away from CHA, staff turnover, and lack of psychiatric residential services within the county. I just want to pause here and say what I'm giving you is this kind of framework that was created over a year ago to ensure that the relationship between the CCO and the Community Mental Health Authority is integrated to deliver both the safety net that comes under the Community Mental Health Authority responsibility and to ensure that the CCO is meeting the obligations of the community and its members in a timely way. And the way in which we do that is to use our professional clinical team and licensing team to look at the performance on the ground in the county every single month. We have had a series of weekly conversations with the parties for over a year. I participate in those conversations as my schedule allows, and Chris Norman from our health systems team leads that effort.
You see all those unduplicated clients. You see any duplicated clients?
We are not seeing...
I just have this cartoon vision of an unduplicated client.
Right, I know. It's a vivid image. I think it's important to say that in this process, we look for the development of contingency plans to address any gaps. We look for resources to be redeployed. I'm happy to give you the intense detail on that in this hearing. I'd prefer to just let you ask me questions about how that works if that detail is of interest to you. I think Representative Hayden has pointed out clearly, and this legislation looks to that challenge that we have taking the statutes for community mental health authorities, which were established prior to the CCOs, and working to dovetail that work with the work of the CCOs. And the Behavioral Health Collaborative report, which we released this week and reported on earlier, has a special governance process that collaborative developed to ensure those parties are working together to the benefit and accountability of the community. And I would give as an example, in addition to our work in Douglas County and Jackson County, we do have counties around the state where the CCO and the county have come together collaboratively, proactively, with no direction from the Oregon Health Authority, to try to make these services for mental health fit together better, to say the county's going to cover these services, the CCO is going to cover these, and that's worked very well. The requirement, I want to underscore this, is that the counties remain responsible for the safety net. They cannot, they can delegate that authority, but they cannot step away entirely from that authority. This bill, as you know, seeks to allow OHA to contract with one or more public agencies or private corporations and removes references to a single contracted agency being the community mental health program for services. It also seeks to shift responsibility of payment from the county to the public agencies or private corporations, taking the place of a CMHP when care is initiated and provided by another county outside of the individual's county of residence. Before passing this legislation, it's necessary to consider several key factors in our efforts to build the strongest possible behavioral health system of care. Numerous complexities exist, as this committee knows. Different regions in Oregon, for example, vary in the number of available providers that are ready, willing, and able to deliver behavioral health services. Further, there are federal requirements for the structure of those services to ensure that the right number of licensed professionals are delivering the care, and there is the clinical accountability that we are all seeking. Providers in less resourced areas of the state often struggle to recruit and retain the necessary qualified staff, which creates barriers to access. And there are also differences among local officials across Oregon counties regarding their preference of whether to provide direct behavioral health services. Klamath County has made one choice. They've created a different system of care that they believe is meeting their needs and that we monitor to ensure is meeting both the statutory requirements and the community requirements that the health authority is responsible for ensuring exist. And others prefer to contract to take these services on themselves. While there's value in having increased flexibility in contracting between public or private entities or more than one entity, it would make the community mental health program responsibilities unclear and increase the potential for duplication or missed services. Further, it would require OHA to expand its contracting unit to properly administer the increased number of contracts and oversight of the duties required. I want to underscore here that We think in the Behavioral Health Collaborative we're bringing forth an opportunity for the accountability, which we think is currently, as Representative Hayden points out, hard for the authority, the Oregon Health Authority, to ensure is met. We've tried to, in the Douglas County example, and as I'll talk about in the Jackson County example, what we've tried to do is exercise our authority as diplomatically as possible and to the fullest extent of the law to get the result that we're seeking.
And soft-hearted.
Pardon me?
Soft-hearted.
Yes. We use the statute, and in fact, both statutes, and in fact, when we were doing the Behavioral Health Collaborative work over the last 7 months, part of what we discerned is that the health authority has a greater ability to leverage those two statutory responsibilities together to the benefit of the community than we have historically used those authorities. Part of that is in the stand-up of the CCOs. We were really focused on getting that done and done right. We just integrated the agency's efforts in these areas 2 years ago when we restructured the agency to not have behavioral health run parallel to the CCOs. So I think we absolutely understand the need to have these systems work more closely together to a single point of accountability. I would also point out that in the funding to the community mental health programs, it's covered a really wide range of functions, from safety net services, the crisis services, the civil commitment services, to outpatient and coordination of care services. Disaggregating these functions could create a challenge in what is already a challenged funding stream to get any of those services delivered at scale and economic efficiency, and that's something we would want to look at as we look at ways to do this work differently. I want to talk briefly about Jackson County, and then I'm happy to answer any questions. We have been working with Jackson County and the two CCOs in that area, All Care Health and Jackson Care Connect, over the last several months to ensure that as they go through a transition, the Community Mental Health Authority requirements are met. We have the two statutes, just so you know, that I'm referencing are ORS 414.610 through 685 and ORS 430.610 through 640. And in meeting with those parties in that instance, we took the following steps to ensure that there is a successful transition and that access to mental health benefits for Jackson County members continue. In this case, in Jackson County, the county wanted to continue providing both its safety net authority and they wanted to continue to provide mental health services to the coordinated care organization. Under Oregon's structure, the coordinated care organization determines their providers for those services. We don't reach over them to make those decisions for local counties. We did, however, want to bring the parties to the table as there was a community concern that needs were not being met, and so we did that. And have reached an agreement with the parties that we will be monitoring on a weekly basis, as we did in Douglas County, to ensure that all needs are met. All Care in Jackson County Mental Health will extend the transition period an additional 90 days to transition members in an efficient manner through June 30th, and to ensure warm handoffs for high-needs members and a cleared shared community communication plan. All Care in Jackson County will be holding weekly in-person meetings to ensure smooth transition of the members, including addressing concerns for high-needs members, collaborating on communication, monitoring the stability of the provider network in the community, and jointly addressing any gaps. Our professional team, licensing and service quality, will also be meeting with both parties on a weekly basis. All Care will submit weekly reports to us on access and capacity for mental health benefits to OHP members. And if access and capacity are not stabilized at an appropriate level to meet member need, we will require All Care to submit a mitigation plan within a week. So there's a lot of good work going on, and to ensure that the local mental health authority and the CCO are delivering on their statutory obligation, their contractual obligation, and their accountability to the community. It is difficult, and I appreciate the goal of this legislation, which is to try to get that system working more effectively. Our principal concern is we believe we have in the Behavioral Health Collaborative set the framework for a governance process that can be community-driven, but will have the fiscal accountability and service accountability that we are seeking as an agency so that we are not intervening throughout the course of the next several years in multiple counties as they sort out who's going to provide behavioral health services. And I'll stop there and happy to answer questions.
My understanding is part of this problem is that the counties historically use Medicaid money for the delivery of Medicaid services to help prop up the whole network for dealing with the crisis services for people who didn't have other funding. And that way, if we give the CCOs the responsibility to integrate the Medicaid services and dollars, if they don't do it inside the county health system, it leaves the county health system without sufficient support. Is that sort of true?
So, Chair Greenlich, that is part of the challenge, to be sure. And part of the concern is if the county loses the portfolio of business that is the Medicaid business, that their cost structure will be destabilized and they won't be able to sustain the safety net. I think that has led to some interesting collaborations between the CCOs and the community mental health authorities. And where those have been successful, I think they have met community need. The other part of that challenge is the county has a different cost structure than the nonprofit private sector cost structure. And in some instances, CCOs have made the decision that in order to have the array of services they need for the size of the Medicaid population in Oregon, they need to contract with private nonprofits who have a different cost structure and can provide those services at a lower cost. One of the things that we've seen, some of the innovations that we've seen around the state where things have worked really well, is where the CCO and the county have sat down together and said, and the county said, with our cost structure, we think it makes sense for us to provide these services, which we can do appropriately. And the CCO has said, great, you provide those, and we're going to build these other services in the not-for-profit private sector because they are more affordable there. And they've decided jointly at the table what makes sense for who to do what. I would use Marion County as an example of a county that I think has really sorted that out in a very clear and effective manner. Deschutes County has had success doing that. Hood River is the shining example of where the community has come together. Everyone at the table, school districts, nonprofits, the county, and kind of said, here's how we're gonna divide up the work. I just want to give a shout out to Hood River because they've also done it with a level of financial and results transparency that is truly remarkable. When CMS Administrator Slavitt was here several months ago, he was blown away by how clear and precise they have been in saying, this is what it costs to do these services, and so these people are going to do it, other people are going to do this, and holding themselves on a highly transparent level to looking at their results on a regular basis and saying, this organization is delivering what we need, how we need it, this organization isn't, and then correcting to meet the needs of the community.
Representative Bueller.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Greenlich. Director Saxton, how would you overall characterize the integration of community mental health with CCOs around the state?
Chair Greenlich, Vice Chair knows, Representative Bueller. Composite, like a score and a grade. Mm-hmm. I think where we are is we're about 20-30% where we need to be statewide on integrating those relationships. And I would hasten to say that given the speed and the challenges that we've faced in the last 3 years of startup of this model, that's that's an okay position to be in. I believe the behavioral health collaborative recommendations will accelerate that, and we have a very sharp focus on getting to a much higher rate of integration and identification of appropriate service allocation within the next 2 years.
Will you make sure that report gets to the committee?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You have a follow-up?
Yes, please. Thank you, Chair. And so that report has a timeline, I assume, in it with regards to implementation of the mental health collaborative recommendations.
The report, Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Nose, Representative Bueller, the report itself does not have an end point. The agency is developing a work plan for implementation, which will have that timeline and will be available to you. Our conceptualization at the collaborative was that we would make significant progress on the four recommendations in that report in the next 2 years.
One more follow-up, please.
Go ahead.
Thank you. To follow a line of questioning from the chair, I frequently talking to people in the CCOs and around the counties, there's the perception or conventional wisdom that a fair amount of the money that is supposed to go to county mental health, behavioral health, doesn't actually get to the people who most need it, that it gets dwindled off to other uses. Can you speak to that concern?
Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Nose, Representative Bueller, we have been, I have heard that concern expressed, and actually my concern has been one step broader than that, which is the mental health system has effectively never been viewed from an integrated spend to to a population to get a result. And so in the last 2 years, we've been working to break those, first of all, to identify all the resources available through both community mental health programs and the CCOs for mental health, to allocate, to identify how those dollars are currently spent and who they're serving, and to confirm that the administrative and overhead costs are not eating up the money that needs to get to direct service. We're in the process of doing that financial analysis. We have some insight into that. Obviously, we look at the CCO's financials regularly on a monthly basis and know that they can only, they have to have limits on certain administrative costs. But I think there is a concern. I know from the data we've seen already that the problem may be the problem you just identified. It also may be that we seem to spend a disproportionate amount of money on certain aspects of behavioral health that are disproportionate to what we should be spending. We're overspending in some areas, we're underspending in others. We will have the clarity in the behavioral health implementation plan for the collaborative's report of exactly where the money goes, and our expectation is that will be fully transparent and help all parties make better allocation decisions. The conversation is often had that we don't spend enough money on behavioral health, and that is quite possibly true, but we're not there yet. We haven't yet broken down the financial spend we're currently making into the populations receiving it and the efficacy of those services. That work is underway at our agency.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is a little more basic. Does this bill help this effort or not?
Good question.
Chair Greenlick, Representative Nose, my concern is that this bill can complicate what we're trying to do in the collaborative. Do we need this bill to get this issue to a solution? I'm hopeful that we do not, that we can do it without the bill. I do want to say, however, that I think the bill, if it were viewed post, if it was tied to the Behavioral Health Collaborative, it's conceivable it could help us ensure that we get that work done in a timely way.
Could you find a way to help us move it in that direction?
I'd be happy to. I can work directly with you to do that.
Comment.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Director Saxon, what ability do you have to hold county behavioral health service providers accountable to meeting expectations that the OHA may have to deliver services to the some of the most needy people in our state.
Chair Greenlich, Vice Chair Nose, the authorities that I have, and this is, I have the ability to hold counties accountable, not through the CCO statute, but through the Community Mental Health Authority, to making sure that needs are met. Yeah, I
how,
do have
how
with the through direct intervention, through auditing procedures by and again, I think we've had success, I would say, in the authorities we've exercised both in Douglas County and previously we've done work prior to my time in Klamath County when their system was at a point of transition. But we can intervene and use our licensing authority to ensure that they do the job. Now, the piece that has not been done before and has not been exercised before, and I have to do more work on this to identify how far this can take us, is, for example, if a county were spending money on the bulk of its funding on interventions that were not the bulk of its problem, could we go in and force the county to make a different decision? I don't know to what extent we can do that. It hasn't been tried during my tenure. But I do know that our team feels we have not fully used the statutory authority we currently have for local mental health authorities and CCOs to use both statutes concurrently to drive to a better outcome.
Well, thank you very much for coming out so early in the morning.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Finishing.
We have one witness on each of the two bills. We'll call him up now.
Follow-up comment or finishing
sure.
Closing comment?
You can come up here and comment, too.
Do you want me to come up there?
Whatever.
Yeah, I'll do it from here. So House Bill 2980, I really wanted this to be a conversation. I'm excited to be able to work with the OHA and Director Saxon on doing something. This may not be the vehicle, but it is a vehicle to start or continue a conversation to make sure that we really do make some changes with respect to Douglas County. Very supportive of ADAPT coming in there. I think that transition took a little too long. Definitely do not want to fragment funding sources. My intent is to work to get funding sources enhanced and more consolidated so that they can be driven more cost-effectively to the client. So,
I had a bill to get ADAPT in, I think, 6 years ago unsuccessfully.
So very, very supportive of my local home county. I think they're doing an excellent job. I think that's important. And this bill wouldn't force anything to take place. It's just an opportunity to have a discussion, an opportunity to have some transition times take place quicker, I think, in the counties that aren't being successful. We've heard example of three counties that are a shining example. That's great. We've got 36 counties in Oregon.
That's a tenth of the way. Representative Saxon, also thank you for paying attention to Jackson County, which
yes.
I know has
yes.
people very upset. Why don't you call both of the next two witnesses? Well,
I'm going with the easy one first, Cheryl Ramirez and Art.
Art something or other.
Sick out. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
And I get slaughtered too,
age.
But
are you frequently called Art something or other?
Art Super Jet Ski is the terminology.
Because I haven't found what's going on.
Like
please
that.
Identify yourself and also mention which bill you're talking about.
Good morning. Chair Greenlich, members of the committee, I'm Cheryl Ramirez. I'm the director of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs. We represent the community mental health programs and the community developmental disabilities programs across the state of Oregon. I'm here in opposition to House Bill 2980. While we appreciate the intentions of this bill, we do not believe this is the solution to stabilize your community behavioral health system or improve the health of your community, particularly in Douglas County. We realize this applies to counties that have declined to operate or contract for a community mental health program, but it sets a precedent for further disruption rather than a streamlined, well-functioning system. The assurance of the system management role was carefully crafted in Section 24 of the original Health Care Transformation Bill, House Bill 3650 in 2011. These responsibilities that Lynn actually mentioned, she gave you a really good outline of those responsibilities, that maintain the safety net services for all community members, regardless of insurance coverage, so not just the Medicaid population, it's the whole community. Examples are the crisis system, jail diversion, and specialized services to help people recover in their communities or transition from institutional level and acute care. System management also plays a big role in meeting the requirements of the US DOJ agreement. And I've given you examples in my written testimony. I won't go into that here. Oregon is one of the 8 states that was awarded a certified community behavioral health clinic demo project. And it's no coincidence that 75% of the CCBHCs or CMHPs, community mental health programs, they are already the system managers at the local level, and this is a core function of the CCBHC demo. Community developmental disabilities programs, like community mental health programs, serve a critical system management role with responsibilities like eligibility determination for the people with intellectual and developmental disabilities who would be in the system, abuse investigations, and planning and developing and delivering case management services. One unintended consequence of this bill would be that in order to open up case management beyond CDDPs and brokerages, Oregon would have to obtain a CMS approval for a waiver change, and you know how long those kinds of processes take. So in sum, we do not believe this is efficient or effective to parcel out community mental health program and community developmental disabilities program local system management responsibilities. There are other ways to stabilize your behavioral health system to improve the health and well-being of your community members. I do want to point you to Douglas County CMHP director's testimony on OLIS and Lane County's testimonies and mine for more details. I think they, of course, the CMHP director in Douglas can tell you from his own experience what he believes, and he also opposes this bill. So thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on House Bill 2980. Thank you.
Are there any questions to this witness? Representative Bueller?
Thank you, Chair Greenlee. I'm not sure if Deschutes County is representative or not, but I get a significant number of complaints from people of lack of access to county mental health service providers, long wait times, not answering the phone when there's crisis situation, there's not adequate ways to handle it. How would you respond to those kinds of...
Chair Greenlick, Representative Bueller, I'd like to hear about the specific circumstances. I couldn't probably generalize. I know that the Deschutes County Mental Health Program is one of the CCBHC demo sites. I'm not sure if you were aware of that. But we'd love to be able to meet with you and talk to you about those issues so that we can figure out what's behind that and whether or not the people who are calling are covered by Medicaid or they're uninsured or what other kind of insurance coverage they might have. That might have something to do with it. That's my kind of top of mind guess. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2980.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just want to highlight for the committee that the Behavioral Health Collaborative Report that was mentioned by Director Saxon is up on OLIS now.
Oh, good. On this bill?
Well, yes. She referenced it on 2980. So it'll be under the 2980 testimony.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Hi. Good morning. My name is Art Suhorzewski, and I represent Family Care Health. Chair Greenlick and Vice Chair Hayden, Vice Chair Knows. I'm here to speak on HB 2979, the easier of the two bills. We are in support of the bill. We think 15-day target for applications is a significant improvement over the current system as it is. I believe the statistic that was given to us yesterday by OHA is that 16,000 applications are over 45 days old. We believe that maybe perhaps this bill is the right path forward for getting that resolved. I specifically want to talk about lines 11 and 12 because that references areas where there's more than one CCO, and we're in Portland where there's two, and Southern Oregon has multiple CCOs servicing the same areas. We believe that that language should be modified so that the member has to make an affirming decision to disenroll from a CCO. There are a number of reasons for disenrollment that are outside the member's control. That could be incomplete application, long processing, perhaps a member doesn't receive an application on time. So those are all situations where a member could be disenrolled without actually making the decision that they want to disenroll from a CCO. So that would be our recommendation. We'd be happy to work with Vice Chair Hayden and Chair Greenlick on that.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the witness? All right, thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2979. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2122. The purpose of opening a work session on that bill today is to share with my colleagues where I am on the bill and to invite comment. We may have a little comment now here, but let me say where we are. We've had some rather intense conversations, as I imagine each of you have had individually intense conversations on this. The speaker called a meeting with all 16 CCOs last week, or this week, I don't remember, some days ago.
This week.
It was, a very useful meeting. We had very clear comments about various elements of the bill. I would like to invite the CCO advocates to provide comments to where the bill is at the moment, and a week from today, if that's possible. We'll get those comments on OLIS when we go forward, but what my plan is to take those comments and look at the report of the of the Oregon Health Policy Institute and make some amendments, propose some amendments to 2122 to a bill we can formally consider. Where I think I'm going at the moment on that bill, as you know, there are four parts to the bill. There's a part on governance. There's a part on reserves. There's a part on new measurement of quality measures, and there's a part on moving towards the use of alternative payment methodologies inside the CCOs. I think, for simplicity's sake, I have an amendment to delete the section on quality. That was a more philosophical discussion, which I think we need to have, but not necessarily in the context of this bill. There was clear understanding that in the objective of reaching 80% of all payments as alternative payment methodology, a bit arbitrary, and we need to say what we can do to to advance the use of alternative payment methodologies, but not have that kind of a strict goal, or maybe leave that section out altogether. The CCOs had some interesting alternative proposals for how to deal with the objective of protecting the CCO reserves so that they can remain being useful to the community. I'm looking for more definition of that, and I hope we'll get some of that in the discussion in the items over the next over the next week. And I'm at the moment considering, under the governance model, rather than suggesting all governance by 2023 being nonprofit community-based organizations with a community, a strong community board, to grandfather in all existing CCOs in the form they're in now and let them remain in that form as long as they're operating in the market and as long as they receive a renewal contract in the next contract round, and hold the idea of the nonprofit community organizations for any successor organization or any new CCOs that come into the market. So I'm considering that, and I'll be happy to have comment. While I'm asking for comment from the advocates, I'd also be happy to have any formal statements any of you would like to put on the record about it. But when my intention would be when we get a new version of the bill, I'm going to take those into account, produce a new version of the bill, and then we'll have a chance to debate the bill in this committee in a formal way, sort of like we're planning on doing with the drug bill next week. So we're open for comments. The comments will come in. We'll put them in OLIS, so you'll have them on the record, and I'll be responding to them as soon as I can after that.
And
yes, ma'am.
End of business next Friday?
End of business next Friday. Or Saturday morning.
Oh, come on.
8:30 Saturday morning. In case you can work all night on Friday night.
Because that's when they'll get them to me.
No, get them to me. I mean, copy Sandy on everything, but make sure I get them so I can start. So I can start compiling them. There were some folks who asked. Yeah, Representative Hayden.
Chair Greenlee, thank you for that. The concept of grandfathering in CCOs as they currently are and dealing with that concept as they would either change ownership or apply for renewal. What sections do you have in mind that you would apply that to within this bill? Of the four sections you mentioned?
That would be section one. The language on, well, there would be two pieces out of that. The language on all organizations needing to be that by 23 would be except all those that are currently there, and that would only refer to any change in ownership of those. I think it's section one. I haven't looked at the bill for a while.
Section one is the financial risk, 25%.
It's the section on governance.
Yeah, that is
section. What's membership of the governance?
Governing body of the CCO include. Anyway, okay.
Anyway,
the thing that I would have in that section that would hold would be the one on public union laws. I'd make that effective on the new contract. I would continue that.
Bueller.
Representative Bueller?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Greenlee, and I appreciate you putting forward this bill. I think you identified some areas that we need to improve CCOs, even though I think by most accounts the first version of CCOs have been quite successful for such a big transformative leap forward. But like any concept, over 5 years you're going to see some tattering at the edges. And I appreciate you doing a lot of thinking on this. I went through your bill and I picked out six areas, at least six problems I think you identified, and I happen to agree with all six of those problems. But I just want you to know that I'm working diligently on trying to help out on this process and come up with amendments and thinking deeply about it. So, and I encourage anyone, any of the CCOs who wants input on this, to please approach me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, if you like, we can share things very good. I'm going to ask Andy to share them with you as they come in.
Okay, sure.
Would anybody else like that? I think shared.
Kenny Guy represents Kenny.
So, thank you, Chair Greenlee. Are we going to have any testimony today on this?
Yeah, series? If anybody, we have time, so
nobody
nobody, we
I'm
asked.
I'm not sure what to say.
So I would just love to say that maybe I don't want to be quite as involved as Representative Bueller, and I love a lot of the ideas that you have in here. I've also been hearing about the work from a group that came out with the Oregon Health Policy Board came up with some recommendations. And I looked in the last materials from the time when we first heard it, and then I looked today, and I still don't see those. And so I just would love to make sure that all ideas are on the table.
They're on the website of the OHA under.
So I would invite people as part of public testimony or because it's open today, to put it on there. Because I've heard about it, but I haven't seen any of the ideas. And I just want to make sure that they're...
They had the option to produce legislative concepts, which they decided not to do. Mm-hmm. They put in a set of recommendations around things like transparency. I met with the chair of the board, and his view was that 2122 in its current form is consistent with what they heard in their hearings and what's in their final report. Their findings were never intended to be, unfortunately, I think, never intended to be specifically translatable into legislative concepts. But the report's on their website, on the Oregon Health Policy Board.
And also, we did have a briefing on that report during the interim. Mm-hmm. So it's out there under the interim, but I can certainly upload it again on this bill for easier access.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
No problem.
Yeah, they made sort of conceptual recommendations rather than legislative recommendations, even though they had the authority to make a legislative proposal. Anybody else? I think... the advocates were waiting for me to talk about how the process would work, and mm-hmm. I think that's what I'm trying to do today, is to give them a clear path forward for how to get their input. Then I'll produce another bill, and we'll begin to debate that specific bill with specific amendments to it.
Alonzo Leon and Representative Hayden.
Yeah, Representative Alonzo.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And actually, you kind of answered one of my questions. But I just wanted to state on the record that I really have appreciated all the CCOs who have come to my office and educated me. I am a new legislator, as everybody knows, and this is a very important topic for me. And you taking time to answer all my questions, my crazy questions, and explaining from your perspective how this bill would impact you, and advocating on behalf of the clients that you're serving, really important, because at the end of the day, it's about our clients and making sure that they have the services that they require and need. I was equally very excited to hear all the ideas from the conversations around making amendments to this bill, because I know that you all met, but you answered my question that they're not ready to present because they need a little bit more instruction.
Yeah, more work to do. Representative Hayden? Sorry, if anybody from the audience would like to comment, your comments are welcome. We have a little time. So.
Come on up.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Greenlee, and thank you for all the work that you've put in on this, and apparently the rest of you that are listening and working on this. It's an important concept that we do continue to transform and progress and integrate oral health, mental health, and as we've heard here today, that there's reluctance to change. Fear of the unknown moving forward. But I think it's important to keep moving forward. But I also think it's important that we really concentrate on what is it that we're trying to fix. And in reference to if we fix something that could affect our networks out there, there could be a negative effect to what we do. And so we want to make sure that whatever we do, we don't have an effect that loses some of our best and brightest innovators in the health space that have really created this CCO model. So I'll stay engaged, and we'll continue to have a conversation.
I think it's very important. My main objective, in fact, the only objective, is to create a model that's sustainable. Mm. And by being sustainable, I think it has to be a model that people have confidence in as we go forward. So I'm not thinking of this year or even next year. I'm thinking of 1919, 1923, 24. How do we move this model into the And stability seems to be very important when we have the kind of craziness coming from the east, the toxic cloud moving across the country. All right, in any order, welcome.
Chair Grinlick and members of the committee, I'm Jeremiah Rigsby with CARE Oregon. Just wanted to briefly say thank you for providing a bit of clarity for that process. I know that a lot of us think this is probably the biggest thing aside from revenue that we're going to deal with this year. And we know it's really, really important moving forward to have stability in the CCO model, especially when there's so much instability at the federal level. And we all have ideas about this really big bill, I think, and what it's going to mean for our different CCOs. We appreciate kind of getting a deadline. I think we're all going to work to get those ideas into you by the end, by Friday, Miss Andy, and hopefully be testifying in support or providing context to those ideas in a hearing to come or a few hearings to come. But I also wanted to say thank you for being open to hearing what we're thinking. It's really complicated. Oftentimes it's boring, but we like it. So appreciate you guys listening, and we'll be probably talking to you pretty soon more about these ideas. And thank you for providing clarity to that process.
Thank you.
Chair Grinlick, members of the committee, for the record, Courtney Johnston representing Coalition for a Healthy Oregon. And I just wanted to sort of ditto what my colleague Jeremiah said and let you know there's, you know, there's 16 of us CCOs out there, and we're all working together to try to achieve the aims that we see in this legislation around accountability and transparency and help address those. So we're working together. We meet and we try to develop something to get back to you. So I do appreciate you giving us this timeline, and it helps us sort of put the pressure on everyone so we can find ways to get language to you. As
I expect
possible.
16 CCOs will produce 18 different ideas.
It's been a fun process, and we're doing our best. So, thank you again.
Hello, Chair Grinlick and members of the committee. I'm Charlie Swanson with Healthcare for All Oregon. I want to put out some reservations about changing too much of Section 1, especially I think you mentioned the open government governance, that the open meeting laws, following the open meeting laws, you wanted to keep that. I'm not sure. To me, that's absolutely critical. It cannot be a community organization without following open meeting laws. I am from Lane County, and you probably know there is a lot. There's a debacle of the Trillium sale to Centene, just wasted or took away immense amounts of public money, and should never happen again. It should never have been allowed to happen in the first place. And we had a number of people come to us and say, "Well, what can we do about it?" You know, to HCO. Well, HCO was, you know, we're working for universal health care in Oregon, so we really didn't know what we could do about it. But Trillium misbehaved in a really bad way at first. They're doing a lot better now, but they misbehaved and misused public funds, and that just should not have been allowed to happen. And one of the ways to not allow that to happen again is to force CCOs to follow open meeting laws. Another way to not have it happen is to keep the prescription of the governance structure that you had in there, that not more than 25% of the governing board can have a financial stake in the CCO. I think that's absolutely critical. And I also think I'm glad that you're thinking seriously about keeping the changes for the reserves. I think it's necessary that the reserves be handled in a way to not let the CCOs run away with them. And so those would be my comments, and we'll send some more details in about some of these things.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Charlie, since I'm not from the Lane County area, I'm not sure what you're referring to. I understand that some folks object to having a for-profit entity run.
Oh, okay.
And I understand that dynamic, but I don't understand what bad thing happened.
Okay.
So if you could reveal that, that would help.
Yeah. So when Centene bought or when Centene bought
Agate
Resources, which was the parent company of Trillium, the owners of Agate Resources had put in something like $6,000 and over the years that had each, like 200 owners, had put in $6,000, and that had increased in value. And if you would have, if they would have gotten a 10% annual return, they would have gotten, when it was sold, they would have gotten $11 million. Instead, they got out over $100 million. So 10 times a 10% annual return. And the way that this was done, at least what the Register Guard reported in the paper, that they had not provided services to a number of clients for a while and built up the reserves to make them look extraordinarily good to Centene when they were sold. They also underpaid primary care providers so that they didn't have, there weren't enough providers to serve. I mean, there was already a shortage anyway. There was going to be a shortage anyway, but they underpaid, so they got even fewer primary care providers than they would have otherwise had. And so they were able to say, oh, well, we can't find people to serve all these clients. And so this reserve was built up. They were sold. And because they could do it behind closed doors, because almost all of the board had a financial stake, they said, oh, well, we'll just pay ourselves $100 million. And then they also got excess amounts of money coming out. And this would have all not been known except we had some intrepid reporters in at the Register Guard, which put this out. And so if they would have followed open meeting laws, we would have known about it. These decisions be made, and people could have objected at the time. But because they didn't follow those laws, because almost all of the board had a financial stake in it, we don't even know that if that's true, they made decisions that shouldn't have been made.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for filling in some of the details. I do think that whatever we do going forward with the escrow account, I know you have one idea in here, and I believe the Oregon Health Policy Board has, or maybe a certain CCOs have ideas about holding on to the reserves but reinvesting a certain amount, like we're asking hospitals to do with charity care. Whatever we do with that, I really appreciate the attention on it, and I do think it's really imperative that for the for-profits who have put in some of their own capital, that we find a way to track that and make sure that whatever percentage the public sector has put into it, that we do not allow to go back to either shareholders or private or public shareholders. So I think it's a really important point. So.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Mr. Mullen, you retired. You don't get the truck.
Well, thank you for that, Mr. Chair. For the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. I was a founder of the Allies for a Healthier Oregon, and I'm on the executive committee. And my purpose for coming up today is just to clarify exactly what you want by when, because I will get an email out to our network. So you would like responses on the bill by like the middle of next week?
By Friday
of next week?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Friday of this week.
The discussion's going to happen at the committee meeting on Friday of next week, then, or just...
No. What I want is I want to rewrite the bill now.
Okay.
I want to create a new bill for us to consider out of an amended version of 2122. If somebody has comments about what they think should be in that new bill, how 2122 should be changed, I like those comments. I expect I'll get a pile of comments. I'm going to go through them and use them as guidance and help for me to think about whatever else I need to do. So I just want to make sure there's input. That input will go on to OLIS. So it'll be on the public record.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll get that word out to the network today.
Tell them that. Three of them don't have to send the same thing in. It could be one person.
Okay.
Please.
All right.
10 letters the same.
Yeah. Anything else? Thank you for being here this morning. Close the work session on House Bill 2122, and we are adjourned.
Great.
We are adjourned.